Okay, the Torah says that the purpose of the tremendous, spectacular show that the Rabbanu Shel Olam did by Yetzias Mitzrayim was partially or mainly Leman Tesaper Bo'ozne Bincho Ben Bincho Es Asher Salavti B'Mitzrayim, that you should be able to tell it over to your children and your grandchildren, all the miracles that happened in Mitzrayim, which form a basis for our belief in the Rabbanu Shel Olam, because we saw clearly that there's a God who controls the world. The Sefer Apirium from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Shlomo Gansfried asks the following question. It says that every father has to tell over to his son. So why does a grandfather have to tell his grandchild? The father will tell his son. So why does the Torah say, Leman Tesaper Bo'ozne Bincha Uben Bincha? I want to add to that question another question, which his answer will answer also. And that is, why does it say Bo'ozne Bincha? Torah doesn't waste a word, not a letter. Right? Why does the Torah have to tell me to tell it into the ears of your children? Just tell me to tell them. I know it goes to their ears. It's not going to go to their big toe. Why be so specific to say it over to their ears? So he says the following. He says that you don't have to tell your grandchild, but the Torah is telling you, you have to tell it to your child in such a way that he will be interested and capable of giving it to his children. Because the mitzvah is not to let your child know a story, but it's to create a link in a chain of tradition all the way back to the people who are there. The way that we know that it's true is because we got it from somebody who got it from somebody who got it from the people who were there. So there's an unbroken chain of tradition, transmission of this tradition. And therefore every generation has the responsibility to make another link in that chain. And that is the whole idea of Leil HaSeder. Every year, the current generation who received from the past generation passes over this tradition, right, no pun intended, to the next generation. That is the idea. And therefore, it has to go into the ears of that child. Meaning, the Ritva says, the Torah says that it spoke about four different kinds of kids. Chochem, Tam, Rasha, Einar Yodei Lishol. Says the Ritva, it's not just to tell us those different kinds of kids, but it's to tell us that if you don't tailor make the story to fit that child's disposition and intellect, if you tell a story to a Chochem that's fit for a Tam, you're going to bore him. And if you tell the Tam what's fit for the Chacham, it's going to be over his head. So you have to make sure the story fits the personality and the intellect of that child. Otherwise, he's not going to be capable or not interested in giving it over to the next generation. If it would just be an idea of letting him know a story, then you'd be Yotze just telling him the story generically. But since the purpose is to create that link, you have to tell it to him in a way that it will make an impression upon him that he's able to understand it and interested in giving it over. Okay. So that is, in general, what the Torah says. The purpose of this spectacular show was to create this foundation of belief. The three places, I want to go a little bit more into detail now about this idea of educating the next generation, and how you do it, and what the purpose is. The three places that the rabbis teach us lichaora the same lesson. Obviously, it can't be the same lesson, so there must be a reason why we need three different places. That lesson is that students are considered like children. Somebody who teaches someone else is like they gave birth to them. Where do we learn that from? The first place is hanefesh asher osu b'choron. It says that Avraham Avinu converted people, convinced them to believe in God, as if he made them. So a person who teaches someone else Torah is like he made them. So that's one place. It's like your child, like you made them. Second place is Vishinantam Levanecha, you should teach your children. The Gemara says that's refers to your students. Students are like children. A teacher is like a parent, and a student is like a child. The Chor is the same lesson, right? You're teaching somebody as if you made them, as if they're your children. And the third place is, it says, these are the children of Moshe and Aaron, and it only lists the children of Aaron. So the Gemara says, we learn from here that someone who teaches someone else's children Torah is as if they gave birth to them. Aaron's children are considered like Moshe's children because he taught them Torah. So again, why do you need three different places to tell me the same lesson? I think they're telling me three different things. The first one is talking about someone who would have absolutely no basis for education if it wasn't for the educator. We'll see in a second. Okay, so in other words, Avraham Avinu, these people had no parents to teach them. Their parents were idol worshippers. Avraham Avinu took them, and he gave them something that no one else was capable of giving them. So then I would understand. That's like you made the person. The second case tells me a different situation, where you have someone who has a basis. He has parents that could teach him, but the parents aren't capable of giving him the full breadth and depth of education. They can teach him, you know, up until a point, after they send him to school. So I might think over there that since the educator is only adding, but not creating the basis, maybe that's not like you gave birth. Kabash Malah, no, even there, it's like you gave birth to this person because you added to their education in detail, in depth, whatever it may be. The third one is the person has a basis and he has everything he could get from the parent. Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he add to Aaron? Aaron could have taught them everything that Moshe could teach them. But even so, if you teach someone Torah, right, even if they don't need you, they can get everything from somewhere else, but getting from you is getting a little bit of your personality, your essence becomes part of them, so it's like you contribute a little bit to their DNA. It's like you gave them birth to them. Even Moshe teaching Aaron's children. Okay, so we have basically three different kinds of education. One is where you educate someone, where you are their total foundation of education. The other one is where you add to their education. And the third is where you add a dimension to their education, even if you don't add anything in, in information or in depth or whatever, but you add a different dimension. Those three things. Now, I was thinking, we find three ways of giving over that Mesorah, that tradition that the Torah speaks about. One, it speaks about Laman Tesaper Ba'azne Bincha, you should tell over to your children. The other one is Vihigadeta Levincha, which means more like testify to your children. Vihigadeta means to say, but it's like Hagadah Seidus, like testimony. And the third one is Vahodata, when it comes to giving over the Mesorah of Torah, of Matan Torah, of Maimon Har Sinai, it says, Vahodata Livanecha Livnevanecha. So we have Tesaper, Hagada, Higadata, and Hodata. And I think these three things correspond to the three different kinds of education. To the child that needs you as his foundation. Right? So it could be a child, it could be a student, like we said. There, it's Vihigadeta Levincha. That's Einoi Ve'Lishol. Child has no basis on his own, doesn't know what to ask. You are creating the basis of that child when it comes to Mesorah. You're giving him testimony. You're testifying to something that he couldn't get on his own at all. That's what testimony is. Right? The judges have to hear it from witnesses who were there. They couldn't possibly know it on their own. So the testimony gives you something that you wouldn't have known without this person giving the testimony. So that's where he got it to Levincha, and there the purpose is to give the child a foundation, right, that he wouldn't have had without you. To give someone a foundation, they have to mamash live it. You have to make them live it. Therefore, when the Higadah to Levincha, it says, Ba'avur Zeh, Asa Hashem li b'seisim Mitzrayim. And Chazal say, Ba'avur Zeh, you can point to the matzah and maror. It's like show and tell. Like, what are they called? Visual aids. They see the matzah, you see the maror, you eat it. It's something that you impress upon the child, something that they can live themselves and feel what you're giving over to them. So that is one kind of education, one kind of giving over a Masorah to a child where you're creating the foundation of that child, right? And that is whether it's your child or whether it's a student or whatever it may be, it's mamish like you made them. The way to make them is to impress upon them, to give them over Haggadah Eidos, to testify to them, and to give them something they can live it themselves. The matzah, the maror, has to be alive, has to be real to them. So that is the first kind. The second one is, once you have a child that has that foundation for himself, but you want to add to it, the matzasaper ba'aznei bincha uben bincha. You want to tell them details that they wouldn't know without you. You want to enlarge on the story and more depth or whatever. So that is Laman Tesapir. You tell it over, and Sipur also comes to the word Sapir, which is crystal. It has to be crystal clear, and it has to be strong, hard, like a crystal. So that, like that. Right, Vishinantam, right, but Vishinantam Livanecha, right. That's the second kind. Has to be Divrei Chadudim, right? Very good, let me end that. Okay. So that's the second. The second kind. And it's interesting, that idea of Lamanta Sapir is said by the plague of locusts. Could have said it by any of the plagues, right? Dafka, this one. Because this plague, it says, it will never happen again. There's no way of really seeing this plague in action ever again. Didn't say by any of the other ones, it would never happen again. But this one, it says, Lo Yia Arba Kamohu. And in fact, there's an Ibn Ezra who says that there is a tradition that since then, there hasn't been locusts in Mitzrayim ever. They don't come to Mitzrayim. So, there's no way for the child to experience it on his own. You have to add to him what he couldn't get on his own, even though he has a foundation. But this prat, this specific, is something he wouldn't have been able to see or experience himself, and therefore, you have to give it to him. So that is the second kind of education, the sipur, right, to the one who has a basis but needs you to add. That's a vishinantam levanecha. And the third kind is giving over a connection to Maimed Har Sinai, which is really the basis for our belief. Even Yetzias Mitzrayim is not 100%. Our belief in the Torah is that we heard the Rabbanim Shem speak directly to us. That is Vahodata. Vahodata means Yediya means a Chibur, a Kesher. That's why Yediya is used as a euphemism for a husband-wife relationship. Now, Yeda Adam as Ishto, Schava Ishto. Right? Yediya means a Chibur, a connection, a bond. Emuna, the Rambam says, is Yediyas Hashem. It doesn't mean knowing God. It means bonding with God. So you have to create a bond. You don't tell him a story. You don't give him testimony. But by learning Torah together, right, you bond him to your neshama, which is bound to the neshamas of all those who taught you, who taught the people who taught you back to Har Sinai. and you mamish relive Har Sinai together. That's why the Gemara says that when you teach Torah, it has to be taught the same way it was given. The reshes of Aziah, right, with fear and trembling, right, it has to be taken seriously as if you're getting it now with the thunder and lightning of Har Sinai. Because in order to connect a child to Maimed Har Sinai, it's not enough just to make them a link in a chain. But it's to let them experience through you, through bonding with your soul that's bonded with all the souls of everyone till Har Sinai, becomes one gigantic soul. It's like they're at Har Sinai. So Torah is given over when you learn it. It's mamish like they're hearing it at Har Sinai every time you learn. So you're not making a link in a long chain. You're creating a bond to that occurrence that is ongoing. It's a different kind of thing. That's why, and how do you do that? So the Torah prefaces this mitzvah of the Hodatam Levanecha, Levnei Vanecha, with the following. Raki Shomer Lecha Ushmor Nafshecha Ma'od. Be very careful. Pentishkach Esadvarim Asheroi Necha, that you shouldn't forget what you saw at Sinai. Ufen Yasuru Milvavcha Kol Yimai Chayecha, and you shouldn't take them out of your heart. In other words, you shouldn't lose that impression your entire life. And then, v'hodata levanecha. Meaning, you need to give the child a personal example. You represent the giving of the Torah. You're giving over to them what you experience. Not what you saw, not what you know, but what you experience. So you're bonding their neshama to your neshama, and that makes it all part of the giving of the Torah now, spans generations. It's not a link in a chain. Chain's a long thing that has many links. Here you're all going back to the source by bonding together. A different kind of thing. That's Vahudatam Livanecha. And in order to do that, you have to be a living example that when they learn Torah, they feel they're learning it from the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Because I learned it from somebody who learned it from somebody all the way back to the Rabbanu Shel Olam who gave it on Har Sinai. And if I bond my neshama to all those behind, then you're hearing it from the mouth of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And that's what it says by Yehuda said to Yosef that Binyamin and his father Yaakov are intertwined. The nafsho kshura benafsho. Their souls are intertwined, and if Binyamin's taken away, Yaakov's going to die. So why would I say their souls are intertwined? Because this is Ben Zakunim. This is the youngest kid from his beloved wife, and the Mela, there's a tremendous connection between their souls. The Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam on that pasuk says, the nafsho kshura benafsho shelimdo Torah. Because they learn Torah together. Because they learn Torah together, that's what intertwines the neshamos. So there's three kinds of education and three ways of achieving it. The first kind is to a person who needs the foundations. Second kind, where you're adding to those foundations. And the third, where you are bonding with the giving of the Torah and adding a new dimension. You're adding a little bit of your soul to that person, even though you're not adding anything in the quality or quantity of their knowledge, surely not their foundation, but you're adding another flavor, another perspective, or whatever, like Moshe added to Aaron's children, a new dimension. And the three ways of doing that is, one, through testimony, and making it living, alive, by visual and audio aids and things like that. That's to create the foundation. That's Haggadah. Then there's Sipur, which has to be clear and hard, and add details and depth to the foundation that the person already has. And then there is Vahodata, to create a bond with that child, right? And the bond is something that you're not adding necessarily anything to their knowledge, but you're creating a new dimension by bonding your soul to their soul. So that's the way you give over Matan Torah.
Yeah. Is that a warning?
No, it's a warning, yeah, because we learn from there that a person who forgets something from his learning is Chayiv Nisa. But that's where you couldn't open a book and get it back, where the only learning was oral. If you forget it, you can't possibly bond that person to Matan Torah because you lost your connection. So it's a warning, yeah. And the way of fulfilling that warning is by learning, right, and not reviewing and not forgetting.
How do we bond ourselves to the experience?
What?
Before we bond our kids, how do we bond ourselves to the experience?
No, so you're supposed to, if you had somebody else to learn from, you bond with them. If you learn from books, so you bond with the book, that's basically someone who wrote that book, right, is giving you over Torah that you can bond with. The bonding is only through Limud HaTorah, the learning Torah. The more you learn Torah, if you're not learning from a person, you're learning from a book, you bond with what you're learning as if you're receiving it from the Rabban Mishol. Okay. And therefore, no child is monolithically one way or the other. So that's why it's not that you have to figure out who your child is, but you know, the child is made up of many parts. You know, the same child could be a Chacham and a Rasha and a Tam, right, and an Eni Yodei Lishaal in different aspects of his personality. And you have to deal with all those aspects of the personality, and that's why the main thing is to listen to your children, what they ask. Chacham Mahu Omer, what does he say? So he says, what does he show air? What does he ask? I know what he says. But the idea is that from the question, you can usually hear who he is. So you listen to the questions he asks, and then you'll figure out, Mahu Omer, what's he saying about himself? And then you'll know how to deal with him. And it could be the same child could ask all different kinds of questions, that in one aspect of his personality he's a Chacham, and in one aspect he's a Rasha, and in one aspect he's a Tam, and in another one he's an Eni Yodei Lishaal. And you have to deal with all the different aspects of his personality. Okay. And it's interesting, in the end of the day, all of this does not just benefit the student or the child, but it benefits the parent who's giving it over and the teacher that's giving it over also. Because the Torah says, L'mantasaper ba'ozne bincha u'ben bincha, and the end of the pasuk is, V'datem ki ani Hashem. You will know, plural. Not just they will know. You'll know better. Once you have to go through this process of giving testimony and adding details and bonding, you're going to know better what you have to give over. That's why it says, "Mi talmida yosa mikulam." Person gains more from his students than anyone else. It says that before the final redemption, the heishiv levavos albonim, the levonim alavosam, that the heishiv levavos albonim, the fathers will influence their children and give to them what the first redemption was, and the children will benefit the parents by giving them the opportunity of making it more clear to them by having to go through this process. And that is what connects the first redemption to the final redemption. That carrying it on and passing it over, right? So just it says, Ki metzeis chomeret Mitzrayim arenu niflos, just like when I took you out of Mitzrayim, I showed you miracles. I will show you that in the future. So there is a connection between the first Geula and the final Geula. And what connects the two is this process of the Avos giving it over to their children and the children enhancing what the Avos knew. And once that first redemption is enhanced, it'll lead to the second redemption. That's what puts them together. Okay. That's the first thing. Any questions on that? I'll go to a few other things here. It says that one of the reasons for Choshech was that Jews had to die before they left Egypt. There were Jews who did not deserve to be taken out. Basically, it wasn't necessarily if they were idol worshippers or whatever, because Jews who were idol worshippers went out of Mitzrayim. It's the Jews who didn't want to leave, who considered themselves Egyptians. They didn't want to leave Egypt. So those Jews stayed there. God said, fine, you don't want to leave. You could stay. You can't stay alive, so you'll be buried here. Unfortunately, it was four-fifths of the Jewish people, according to the smallest amount. So a tremendous amount of Jews died. God didn't want Paro to see Jews dying, because it would have been counterproductive. He would have said, you see, it's not me. It's just a plague that's affecting everybody, because Jews are dying too. So the Rebbe Shalom turned off the lights and killed these Jews under the mask of darkness. So Paro shouldn't see it. It always bothered me. And Paro wasn't stupid. But before the lights went out, there were like 3 million Jewish men between 20 and 60 in Egypt. The lights go out. 3 days later, 6 days later, they go back on. And now there are 600,000 Jews. One-fifth are left. Right? Where are they? Hiding under the bed? But where do these Jews go? And, wonder of wonders, the cemeteries are full. Now, you don't have to be a really smart person to figure out what happened. So what did God gain? I understand if two or three Jews died, he could hide it under the guise of darkness. But if four-fifths of the Jewish people died, what did it help to do it under darkness? The answer is that people are affected by what they see. We are affected by our senses. And sometimes even if you see something and it's really not that way, that's what impresses you. We are physical beings. We are more affected by what we see than what we deduce intellectually. There are many proofs to that. Okay, you can know something intellectually, but what really makes an impression is what you see. One of the classic examples is what the Tzohar Rosh Yeshiva says. You see a bench that has a sign on it, wet paint. And it's glistening. What do most people do? Why? Don't you believe the sign? The paint is glistening. Why do you have to touch it? Because when you see the sign, you intellectually know that it's wet. When you feel it on your finger, it's a different story. So what you feel and sense with your senses makes it more of an impression on you than what you deduce intellectually. The Sefer HaIkarim says that Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly what was going on down at the base of Har Sinai, because God gave him a blow-by-blow direct description of what's going on. Yet he didn't break the luchos till he saw it. Not because he didn't believe God, but it made more of an impression when he saw it. Therefore, the Rebbe Shlomo said like this, if Paro will deduce that Jews died, it's not going to make the same impression on him as if he sees Jews dying. It's not the same thing. And therefore it helped to do it under the guise of darkness. With that, can explain something else also from the Sedra. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, God said, I'm going to kill the firstborn exactly at midnight. Yet when Moshe said it over, he said about midnight. So the Gemara says, Rashi brings down, that they were afraid, Moshe was afraid, that the Egyptian clocks would be fast. And when their clock said midnight, the plague wouldn't come, because it was really a few minutes before midnight. And they would say, Moshe Badoihu, Moshe's a liar, right? And therefore, Moshe didn't say at midnight, to take in consideration, maybe their clocks will be wrong. He said about midnight. So they would never say Moshe Badoi. So the obvious question is, what's the difference going to make? Right? So at midnight on their clock, the Makkah doesn't come. So 3 minutes later, all the firstborn are dead. When did you lose? So for 3 minutes. So some say that for 3 minutes, the world said Moshe's a liar. That in itself is a negative thing. But others say no. What you see makes an impression. And if when the clock says 12, there's no Makkah, 3 minutes later there is, you lost the impression. First impressions are the most important thing. And that's what you see. After that, you deduce, okay, maybe our clocks were wrong. But it doesn't take away that first impression. That's what makes an impression on a person. Another thing from the Sedras. A few more short things and then we'll... it says that God did a miracle, and some say it's the biggest miracle of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, that he put the favor of the Jewish people in the eyes of the Egyptians. They looked up to us. They were charmed by us. Chein ha'am. Before, they should have hated our guts. So why did God do that? So we're not now going to why he made that miracle, why it was necessary. It wasn't because that way they'll give us gold and silver, because he could have put the fear of the Jewish people in them. But he put the charm. On that pasuk, it says like this, Vayitein Hashem eschein ha'am be'ini Mitzrayim. God put the charm of the Jewish people in the eyes of the Egyptians. Gam ha'ish Moshe, even Moshe Rabbeinu, right, seemingly because he's the one who was causing all this havoc in Mitzrayim. Gadol ma'ol be'enei avdei paro uve'enei ha'am. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was great in the eyes of Paro's servants and in the eyes of the people. Now, which people is this talking about? So simple meaning is, not only was Moshe Rabbeinu great in the eyes of Paro's servants who saw firsthand the miracles that were going on, but even the people who didn't see these miracles openly, right, they weren't privy to the things that were going on in Paro's palace, and they only saw the damage that Moshe was doing to them, they also, right, respected and were charmed by Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a simple meaning. But one of the Mefarshim, I think even the Ibn Ezra, I don't remember who it is now, says Be'enei Ha'am means not only was Moshe Rabbeinu well respected by the servants of Paro, even the Jewish people respected him. So he's bothered me, and it doesn't make sense, right? Until he became a Rav. That didn't bother me anymore, right? Not only did Paro respect him, even the Jews respected him. That's already something. So I don't think you have to say anything more. Okay, one last thing. Yeah.
There are times where the intellect can supersede what the eyes see. And I'll give you an example. Someone's walking down the street and there's a high tension pole of electricity and on it's written Sakana, danger. And you hear the pole buzzing with electricity. And you may even see sparks or something like that. No man in his right mind is going to go over and touch the pipe, because he wants to see if there's 10,000 volts flying through that. It's not a situation where it's dumb, it's simple, and you're just going to put your hand in what paint. So there are certain circumstances where you can intellectualize and overcome what the eyes see.
No, not overcome, because you're not overcoming it. You just don't need the thing. But I guarantee you that if you would touch that, you would know much more that there's electricity there than there is left. Okay. Yeah, not for too long, but you know.
Is it important to know the difference between the four fists and the fifth? Has anyone discussed the difference between why four fists fell into feeling they were Egyptian and fifth didn't?
No. Just that those were the ones who assimilated. They were...
When did the Heir of Rav?
What? No, they weren't the Heir of Rav. The Heir of Rav came later when Adam is riding with them. But the ones that died in Mitzrayim were Jews who didn't identify with being Jewish, who lost their Jewish identity.
Slaves. Huh? Were they separated by being slaves?
Well, they, again, sometimes you get so used to the slavery that you, what's it called, in countries where there are, you know, castes or whatever, the ones that are lower castes get so used to it and they accept it that's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's one of the reasons.
You identify with them,
right?
And you have people kidnapped. You
right.
They identify with them.
Right. Exactly. 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 Right. They. Yeah. What was I going to say? The. That's why you eat the matzah before the maror. The matzah represents freedom. The maror represents the bitterness of slavery. First you would eat the maror, then eat the matzah. But some say that until you're out, you can't really appreciate how bitter it is. You get so used to it right? That you don't appreciate that there's anything wrong. When you're out and you look back, then you can appreciate that it was bitter. The Torah says that the sojourn of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim was 400 years. So when they translated the Torah into Greek, they changed that sentence, because not true. We weren't in Mitzrayim 400 years. And it's easy to know that, because it says that Levi went into Mitzrayim. We know how long Levi lived. We know how long Kahas lived. We know how long Amram lived. We know Moshe was 80 years old when they went out. If you add all those years of Levi, Kahas, Amram, and 80 of Moshe, it doesn't equal the 400 years. So they couldn't have been in Mitzrayim, and they didn't live consecutively, they lived concurrently. So we only are in Mitzrayim 210 years. So they changed it, and they said, Moshe ben Israel, b'Mitzrayim, b'shara ratzos, in Mitzrayim and other lands, 400 years. Total, including from the time that Yitzchak Avinu was born, or the Bris ben Absar. So, but we have the original Hebrew, it doesn't say shara ratzos. How do we learn that pasuk? So if you look at the sentence, I think the answer is clear. In the beginning of the sentence, it says, Moshe ben Israel, b'Mitzrayim. The end of the sentence says, "Ve'yehimi kates arba me'o shana shloshim shan arba shana yatzu tzivos Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim." There's a difference between Mitzrayim and Eretz Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a state of being. Mitzrayim means you are narrow. Tzekvetched. Constricted, constrained. Right, not able to break out of that narrowness. They were in that state of narrowness for 400 years. But they weren't in the land of narrowness. The place where that feeling is strongest is the land of Egypt, where you're a slave to your Yetzer Hara. You can't free yourself from your passions. You're not in charge, but whatever whim you have rules over you. That's slavery. That's real slavery. So they were in that Mitzrayim 400 years, even in Eretz Yisrael. Right? They couldn't break out totally to their full potential. So they were narrow, constrained, constricted. At the end of the 400 years, they left the land of Mitzrayim, where they were only the last 210 years. So that's the idea.